This is an Algoa FM news exclusive.
Welcome to another episode of Journey to Justice, Season 3, Episode 4. Now, before I get into anything, I wanted to thank you all for listening. This podcast has breached 100,000 listens on Iono, and I'm just so grateful that you are taking this journey with me. So thank you so much to all the listens. 100,000. I was absolutely blown away when I heard that. So, but to get back to the trial this week, the state called Domesh Kanti to the stand. His name was not on the witness list, but he works for MTN. He has been for 29 years, and he's been the manager of the law division for the past 22 years. Now, he explained how they go about giving police information they require. So the police must first issue a Section 205 subpoena. Now, once that is authorized, it goes into an MTN portal where the case number will be verified, and then they have access to a lot of things, which was very interesting. All call data records, data usage, voice notes, SMS messages, MMS, Rika info, a SIM card profile, a handset profile. They can even record the apps that were on your phone, outgoing voice notes, incoming voice notes, call forwarding, and even where you call from. They have serial numbers of handsets, SIM cards. They can even give you a precise location from where you used your phone right down to the suburb. They can see if you swapped your SIM cards. And they will even know if a SIM card is damaged or stolen. It's very interesting. But the testimony could also be very boring at times, but so important. Because remember, it's the state's case that the accused used multiple SIM cards to communicate with one another. So this is now in court records and will no doubt come up again during Arnold's trial. A big explosive testimony came from Karissa Roots, Crystal Wiggles' twin sister. She did not say much on the stand, though, because Standard had read out WhatsApp messages between the two sisters and asked Roots to give context to it. Now, if you've been following the story from the beginning, you would remember that Arnold and Crystal were in Johannesburg on the 20th of October, 2021. This was 2 days after Vicky was murdered. So Crystal messaged her sister to ask for a favor. Now, the following conversation is a reenactment with certain parts redacted. It took place on October the 20th and also on the 21st of October 2021.
Can you do me a favor? Can you phone the police and say that you heard a domestic violence incident at number 20? You're also aware that there has been illegal activity going on there? And can they dispatch a van to go look if the people are okay? Arnold's guys went into Vicky's house. She's not there, but her crack pipe, coke, and weed is lying everywhere. So, say that you live in the complex. I can't call from here because they dispatched me to the Johannesburg police station. If they ask who stays there, say Vicky to Blanche. Focus on evidence of illegal activity. Also inform them that there's a minor living there.
If they refuse to go in, I'm going to say I'm worried if there's a dead body in there, so they need to get in.
Yes, definitely. Are the police there yet?
Nope, still waiting.
Maybe you should call again and say you're waiting there.
Are we expecting this female to come back anytime soon?
No.
Any idea where she would have went?
No idea, girl. Leach says it's her birthday tomorrow and she has gone for a bender. Okay, cool. Arnold is on the phone with Sharon now. You can just tell Sharon when you're there that she called the security and they made contact with you if need be.
They're going to ask me if I've tried to call this woman, so what must I do?
Tell them that you can't get in contact with her and you think you should let the family know to file a missing persons report.
Okay, can I make it if I call your number from my work phone and you just press dead?
Yes. Take her number though, it goes straight to voicemail. You can now also walk in now because Sharon is there. Take photos.
Okay, I'll keep you posted. Find Sharon, Chris, they're busy cleaning up inside here. Who's this other lad, Lighty, here?
I have no idea, girl. Sharon says she isn't cleaning up.
Fuck, I actually don't know what to say to the police right now. Sharon said to the guys that I'm here to take pictures of the house, but the story is just not lining up. But the stuff isn't here. Can you phone me, Chris? Chris, please call me back. Fuck sake, been holding for 10 minutes already on the 10111 number. I'm getting anxious in the house. I don't want to be here in case she comes home, Chris.
She won't.
Don't stress. We're going to the police station now. Do I go with to the police station and just make sure he does what he needs to?
Yes, please, if you can. Maybe follow up with him later if you need to leave. Leach went back home to get a photo of Vicky for the report.
Fuck, I hope he hasn't cleaned any of the drugs or used it. He must leave everything as is.
He said he left it as is.
Perfect. He needs to flip and get out of here. You know, Chris, I nearly vomited from the smell in the house. Those dogs have no food or water. I feel so sorry for them.
That's disgusting. When we get home, we're fetching the dogs.
Now, Sharon Yolani, who's also a state witness, had keys to Vicky's house. Roots even said she will tell police that she had given Sharon some sugar water for the shock. What stood out for me in these messages was that Roots referred to Vicky as this woman, indicating to me that she knew of Vicky, but certainly did not know her. Roots testified that it was her understanding that Arnold was in a divorce battle with Vicky and knew she was using drugs, and he wanted proof as it would strengthen his case as he wanted full custody of his son. Leach's defense advocate Jodine Kurtzen then asked Roots if she was used to get dirt on Vicky, to which she replied, yes. Roots also testified that she and her sister tried to get Vicky fired from KW Explore by complaining about her bad service. Roots said Arnold wanted to make Vicky's life as difficult as possible and cause her to lose her job. Vicky was not on good terms with her team leader at the time, and the twins figured it would be the perfect opportunity to put the plan in motion. Roots also testified that her sister told her Leach told Arnold he had spent 60,000 rand of his own money to feed Vicky's drug habits, and Arnold said he would pay him back if he wrote an affidavit for the lawyers to help in his divorce case. Arnold allegedly said nobody should know, though, so it doesn't look like a bribe. And as we know, Leach did in fact write a letter to Arnold, which he sent to him via email. It was then that Vicky was instructed to go for another drug test, but she refused unless there was a court order for her to do so. I actually don't remember if I mentioned this in my last episode, but what was really sad for me was that since the beginning of this trial, there hasn't been a single person in court to support Vicky, not a single one. And I mean, there were 150 people at her memorial service all crying, and there's been no one at court supporting her. One person reached out to me on Facebook and said, look, can I come to court? I said, of course you can. It's an open court. And I said, you know, there's been no one in court to support Vicky. And she said, well, then I will be the first one. So she did come. Her name is Des Goodwin. I've never met her before, but she is a well-known activist here in Gqeberha. And it was lovely to chat to her. And I wanted to speak to her a little bit about her passion for activism, why she decided to be the first person to be there in court in support of Vicky.
She died in the most horrific way, and there's nobody here for her. So as women, we have to let our voices be heard. We need to stand up and say, this is not on, this is not right. Come and see what a person who does this to women looks like. So you can warn your children and your family that these are the people to stay away from.
So for the longest time doing this podcast, I've been wanting to introduce you to someone called Jeffrey. Now, Jeffrey is a court interpreter. He's been there for 20 years. He is such a lovely fella. He also was involved in the Jade Panayotu murder trial, doing all the translations. He's an interesting fella. So I thought I'll end this podcast on a lighter note with a chat I had with Jeffrey, telling me a little bit more about interpreting in court and how you go about doing it and what it really entails to do that kind of job. Chatting now to Jeffrey, who's been an interpreter at court. Jeffrey, how long have you been an interpreter here at the High Court?
Here in the High Court is more than 20 years.
20 years?
Yes.
So it's not just about being bilingual or understanding Xhosa and being able to translate what someone is saying. You explained to me earlier it's much more. Is it something you study?
No, it's not something that you study. You must be gifted in languages. I was only taken very late to a course which was very irrelevant to me because already I was above what they offered at the course. Instead, I had to assist and to help in this particular field. It's a discipline that I acquired from my theological studies, which were called hermeneutics. That is hermeneutics and exegesis that relates to interpreting the Bible.
Okay.
That's why you have to do Greek and Hebrew.
And you did Greek and Hebrew?
Yes, I did Greek and Hebrew under the Dutch Reformed Church. And that was very helpful for me to do the interpreting as well as the translation.
So interpreting court proceedings, we've seen here in the Vicky Terblanche trial, you know, Reinhard Leach is bilingual, but he's entitled to have an interpreter. Why is it important that a person has the right to have an interpreter, even if he understands the language?
A person may understand the language.
But not the
law. But the law. Because each discipline have got its own language. Terminology. For example, we have listened here to a cell phone expert. And even if we understand English, but we don't understand the terminology.
And I didn't understand half of the terminology because it was so technical and forensic.
Yes. Now, law, they're using very high style of speaking.
Formal, almost.
Formal, yes. Now, for someone who's just a lay person, not accustomed to this environment, you may think that you understand or you follow, but somewhere you are getting lost in the mist. So it is therefore an imperative that even if you understand the language, but there must be an interpreter who will sit there and make sure that things that according to his discretion, may be beyond your understanding.
Yeah, there's no miscommunication or misinterpretation.
Yes, to go and explain that.
Now, besides from the language, how much in your 20 years have you actually learned about the law? You must have learned so much about the law itself.
Quite a lot, because you can't be a high court interpreter if you don't read the law. It's very much important. For example, when there's an argument before the case, the state argues, the defense argues, there's a lot of reference to case laws. Now, a brilliant interpreter write down all the case laws. Then you go and read. For if they feature in the judgment, then you understand.
So you have homework too to do?
You have got a lot of homework to do too.
So in closing, what do you enjoy most about this job? Because you're always so friendly to the accused, to the family members. You're always greeting everybody. You're like the only light shining here.
What I like about the job is the interaction.
Because you're a people's person, definitely.
Yes, I am a people's person. I'm sure it's by virtue of my call. My calling as a clergyman. But there is so much that I'm taking from the courtroom that becomes relevant to theology.
Okay.
I'm going to make an example of one case law amongst many, the one versus Makiki, where a judge deals with the question of the distinction between remorse and regret.
Okay.
Judge Bonan, where he says the distinction between the two, regret, boils down to self-pity. But then it deals with remorse. Remorse is appreciation of the knowing pain of another. And that culminates in a rare remorseful person, in the contrition of the remorseful person.
That's powerful.
Now, that's theological.
And very powerful.
Very powerful. Then that's theological. Then you say, if you come and you look at it from an angle of the Bible and theology, it sheds so much light about God's attitude when it comes to the question of forgiving. And even the penitent sinner who comes to you, do you come to God because you say, I'm taking responsibility, I'm remorse, or are you coming to say, hey, I've been caught out?
That was an Agogo FM News exclusive.